It's quite possibly nothing.
Hi, this is Dane Scaysbrook. Mysteriously, or not so mysteriously, absent from the world of podcast hosting for several months. I think you can guess right off the bat that my wacky co-host, Alex, is not here. So if you were expecting a wacky fun romp, I'm afraid to disappoint you. I consider myself barely competent at solo podcasting at best.
The truth is, we've both been eager to return to podcasting, but every time we get close to it, outside factors insidiously conspire against us. I have, however, not completely vanished from the podcasting world, as I've made several appearances on Regan's very excellent Anime 82 podcast. In fact, if you go to his website right now, www.anime82.blogspot.com, you can see I'm featured. No, featured's too kind a word. I appear in that episode, and I also believe I'm going to be appearing in the next one. I also did a recording with Ipa of Ipa's Choice, my good chum, and the very wonderful Jeff Deterik of Lathers Blathers fame, a man whose contributions to fandom and geekery are so cool that they often transcend the very things he pays homage to. Now, no doubt Alex is listening to this, if he downloads it at all, and says, "Gee, he's in full-on ass-licking mode, eh?" Well, no. I only say that because they're genuinely cool people, and I try to maintain as much contact with them as possible, despite my lowering presence on the internet. I appeared and recorded some stuff in Eepa's I Heart or I Love the 80s podcast. Actually, me, Jeff, and Ipa, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, we recorded an episode on a very awesome 80s movie, Big Trouble in Little China, a film that's very close to my heart. And despite Ipa's best intentions, the episode was kind of cursed. A few things went wrong, and finally, you know, we got back together and we recorded it again, and then Ipa said, "Okay, well, I'll just go and edit this, and I'll get back to you shortly." And then a few months passed, and then a few more months, and then a few more months. And then Ipa, God love his soul, said, "You know, I believe it actually went missing on my laptop, believe it or not." So we're probably going to record another episode of that sometime in the future. We all thought it was probably a good thing anyway, because I think as the recording went on, we developed a better rapport, and I think we can do a much better recording next time. Although the last one was pretty cool, I think. Unlike Alex, I'm a little bit nervous when I do a three-way with some guys. Anyway, I brought this tale up for a very specific reason. Because when we last recorded that episode on Big Trouble in Little China, things were quite different. In the time that passed since that, I discovered my wife was pregnant. We had a girl, a lovely, beautiful baby girl, and she's now 2 months old. And I know it's the duty of every father to boast about his child, but in my case, I believe it is absolutely justified. You see, lots of people were telling me, "Oh, I'm sure you're excited about being a father, but, you know, you're going to have a screaming, whining baby, and you're going to be changing nappies all the time. Get ready for some sleepless nights," they'd say. Yet, when my daughter was born, she let out a slight yelp to clear the lungs, and then she proceeded to open her eyes and look at me, the person who was holding her at the time, right in the eyes. And yes, before any negative douchebag reminds me that babies can't see when they're just born, I'm quite aware of that, but still, it was a defining moment for me anyway. She is a very alert girl, and she was born with a full head of hair. And to this day, she never cries, only when she's really hungry. Case in point, she's right next to me at the moment. I'm home alone with her. Can you hear anything? And no, Alex, I'm not smothering her. Alex always likes to say, as anyone who has checked the Anipak website,
www.anniepack.blogsome.com, you'll realise that he always says, "Dean's up to his ass in diapers, eh?" Which to me conjures up images of something like Full House, where Uncle Jesse was left with the kids all day, and the baby's peeing itself every few minutes, and wackiness ensues. But it's really nothing like that at all. You change them every few hours, something I totally don't mind doing, and that's pretty much it. When you have a baby that does something that other kids don't do, i.e. not cry, you're kind of left with a lovely little baby who is sleeping most of the time and very alert and awake for the rest of the time. And yes, she watched the new Cobra OVA with me last night and seemed to be pretty focused on it. She was also born on May the 2nd, which is Buddha's birthday, or at least the Buddha's birthday public holiday in Hong Kong, which I thought was cool. At the time of her birth, I was watching a Swedish film called Ronja Rövardotter. I hope I said that right. I'm sure Borky Bork will correct me there. But anyway, it is a movie that I will treasure for the rest of my life. Ronja Rövardotter is, to a lot of Swedish children or Scandinavian children, what The Muppets, Star Wars, Labyrinth, or Fraggle Rock would be to many of us children of the 80s. It's actually a very popular book by Astrid Lindgren, who is a woman that I genuinely respect and admire, and she is the author of quite a few classic novels, which a lot have been translated into English. Probably most popular amongst them is, of course, Pippi Longstocking. In a nutshell, the film follows the story quite closely. It's essentially about, we witness her birth at the start of the movie, who is quite a capricious and free-spirited young girl, who is obviously the daughter of a group of robbers. A giant lightning strike makes this castle split into two, and then a rival family of robbers set up on the other side of the now partitioned castle. And the movie really just follows Ronja's adventures across the land surrounding the castle and her friendship with the son of the other robbers on the other side of the castle. Obviously, this friendship is not really approved by either side. And surrounding the castle is kind of a mystical land with trolls and goblins and other creatures of Scandinavian folklore. And I probably couldn't have watched this movie at a better time. When watching it, I was instantly transported back to my childhood. Although I hadn't seen this in the 80s, and I didn't have any nostalgia about the film, it kind of made me feel like I had gone through a time machine, and I was watching this in some theatre in the 80s. It's hard to explain. The movie had an awesome sense of adventure, which really appealed to my inner child. I was genuinely moved by it and found it really enjoyable. Remember, as the film ended, I thought, I'd really like to have a daughter like Ronja. It's a family film in the truest sense of the word, in that everyone in the family can enjoy it, from the baby to the grandmother. I recall a scene where winter starts, and everyone in the castle, to celebrate winter, or all the men, celebrate by stripping completely naked and rolling around in the snow. It's actually quite a nice and funny scene. Nothing is left to the imagination, because penises dangle left, right, and centre, not in a gratuitous fashion, mind you, and it was done so innocently, and the values of these people were such a contrast to the frankly contradictory Puritan values that America has thrust upon a lot of the world these days. I know, not every American's like that. Still, it conjures up images of, "Well, you can't watch that, young man. I'll have none of that disgusting nudity in my house. Now you turn the channel and watch a Steven Seagal movie this instant, young man." It kind of reminds me of those comments in Internet Movie Database in the forums for something like Reservoir Dogs or Kill Bill, and the post would say, "Nudity? Question mark? Hi, I really want to watch this film, but my mom won't let me watch it if there's any boobies in it." And folks, if you see those, don't reply to it, because I learned long ago, it's just trolls.
Anyway, literally, as the credits rolled and I pondered on this film and my childhood and the childhood of my child-to-be, my wife Connie said the three words that every father is waiting for around the 8 to 9 month mark. My water broke. Well, that's kind of a cliche, but suffice it to say, it was apparent that she was in the very early stages of labor, which can go from anywhere to 2 hours to 2 days. Around about midnight, we hopped on the last MTR train, went across over the bridge, got off at a place called Lyking, and then took a taxi to the Prince of Wales Hospital in Sha Tin. Connie seemed so calm and collected, although she was practically reduced to tears a few days before. She kept scouring forums, listening to what everyone had to say about childbirth being the most painful thing in the world, blah-bitty blah-bitty blah, which I'm sure it is. We got to the hospital, the nurse took her away and said that I should head home and go to bed. There were no visitors allowed at that time, and she probably wouldn't have had the baby throughout that duration anyway. So her mother was with me at that stage, and I went back to her place and stayed there. I went there the next morning at about 10 o'clock and was told that, well, could be any minute, or it could be a day later. Connie finally decided to have the baby induced, which meant that she'd have the baby sometime that day as opposed to 2 days later. So I was in the room, the small waiting room, with a few other pacing fathers for about 6 hours or 7 hours. No, wait. Yeah, maybe 8 hours. Finally, at about 7 p.m., I was called into the room and saw something that every man should at least see once in his life. And if this moment doesn't change you somehow or resonate within you somehow, then you, sir, have no heart or soul. Despite my comments about power chicks in films and how that Queen in 300 utterly ruined the film, which I still agree with and stand by to this day, I do have to let everyone know that this experience made one thing clear. Women are stronger than men. Again, perhaps somewhat conditioned by TV and sitcoms, I'm sure you're all imagining the Murphy Brown-esque birth where she's kicking and throwing and causing a huge panic and it's a huge calamity, but it was nothing like that at all. The scared girl that I was speaking to a few days ago was a very strong, determined woman who did what needed to be done, pushed that baby out, and any fear that I thought she would have was replaced with utter strength and determination. Me, on the other hand, I was a bit of a nervous wreck. I remembered all the smart-ass jokes I'd planned to say in the delivery room. Well, none of them came to me at the time of birth. And while sparing everyone the graphic details, I can say that, again, don't trust TV, because a whole bunch of stuff happens at birth that you probably don't know about. Believe it or not, the hardest part had yet to come. That part was the month preceding the birth, and believe it or not, it had nothing to do with my baby at all. You see, Chinese, especially the Cantonese, have quite a few little precautions they take after birth to maintain the health of the lady, who obviously has had a great physical change within her, and to help the body cope, there are a few things which the new mother should do. First, she should not touch water for a month. All baths are sponge baths with something we call gong soi, which means ginger water. Connie's hair couldn't be washed at all, which that was something she hated, and in fact she secretly did wash it when her mother wasn't home. And she could only eat gong fan, or ginger rice. So during that time of recovery, she was at her mother's home, my mother-in-law's home, which was in my old apartment complex, which, for several reasons, I really didn't miss, coupled with the fact that it was starting to get damn hot,
and frankly, I really didn't want to be there. I ended up living between two places for the better part of a month. And that's one thing you got to know about me. I am one hell of a sensitive sleeper. My wife thinks I'm crazy when the subject of sleep comes up, because for me, I always envy those, especially, it seems, I don't know if it's genetic or if it's just environment, but Asians seem to be some of the best sleepers in the world, at least in terms of the duration between eyes open, eyes closed, asleep, be it Hong Kong, Korea, China, Japan. You'll often find lots of people fast asleep on buses or trams or whatnot, which is probably due in part due to the working life, which can often be hard and strenuous and or stressful, and people stay up late. But suffice it to say, it takes me a while to fall asleep under the best of times. If I'm in a bed that's not mine, add another hour or two to fall asleep. If the temperature changes throughout the time I'm asleep, I'll probably wake up. I notice a difference. If someone in Mozambique drops a pin, I'll probably wake up. If I feel someone else in the house is awake and moving about, I'll probably stay awake or wake up. If I am too hot, I cannot sleep. There are so many factors, all of which conspired against me at my mother-in-law's home. It was a different room. It was quite noisy. Despite the fact that the air conditioner was on, I was still hot. Obviously, the baby, whilst certainly being a wonderful baby and not a crier, obviously still had her needs, you know, food and whatnot, and she doesn't really have a good body clock in terms of what society considers to be a good body clock at the start of birth, obviously. So one day I'd sleep there, the next day I'd go to my apartment, do the washing and things that needed to be done, and then go to sleep. Fully rested, the next day I'd go back to see my baby and my wife and sleep there. Again and again and again and again and again. Finally, around the 1 month mark, my mother came to visit and Connie could go back home with me. Thank goodness. My mother actually came on the night of my birthday, 27th of May, for those of you that don't know. And we were all jubilant to see her. She was absolutely jubilant to see her granddaughter, who we had called Caitlin Penelope Skaysbrook Hoylam. She's got what we call an English, although I know Caitlin or Penelope are not English in origin, and a Chinese name, Hoylam. And the next day, she got a call from my father in Australia. His mother, my grandmother, had died. I was extremely close to my grandmother, who had somewhat turbulent life at certain points, but who never gave up and was a wonderful, wonderful person. No one expected her to go so soon, probably not on my birthday. Yet, believe it or not, through our many talks, we actually did talk about death. And while, yes, I had a Catholic upbringing, my family is largely of Irish heritage, my time in Asia and Hong Kong and exposure to Eastern philosophies and religions, as well as a growing fascination with the metaphysical, kind of made my beliefs not easily categorized in any religion. I know and have experienced enough that despite the pain of her loss, she knew it was inevitable, and, for lack of a better word, she welcomed the next stage. I think my friends helped too. I mean, my friends in Hong Kong who approached it from a very different perspective or philosophy than those in Western countries might. The arrival of my daughter and the passing of my grandmother was a natural part of the chain of life. As sad as it is to see someone go, parts of them do embody those who come after her. And I suppose it's a valuable life lesson. We may lose people who are important to us, but that doesn't mean that we won't
find or meet someone or give birth to someone special in the future. Despite this, we soldiered on, and a few days later we had the one-month banquet. Yes, everything in Hong Kong or China usually has a banquet associated with it, and for me, it was the one-month banquet. Again, like the awesome film Ronja Rövardotter, came at such a poignant time and really allowed me to reflect on my own childhood and the fact that I would be instrumental in the development of someone else's childhood. This banquet served to remind me the life I had made for myself thus far. This was probably highlighted thanks to my mother's comments and reaction. She could see my life in Hong Kong. It's one thing to hear about it, but to kind of see it all together, all my friends and co-workers and family, and the fact that, in truth, I had more of all of those in Hong Kong than I did in Australia. You see, as I said before, I was never a fan of rugby. I never touched anything alcoholic. I despised it. I loathed the Howard government and the fact that alcohol seemed so prevalent in every social activity in Australia. You see, there's that kind of time after high school where the eyes of a child finally close and the eyes of an adult start to open. The cool stuff I wanted to do with my friends, like go camping and catch a film or something, was replaced with, "Hey Dane, let's go to the pub. Let's go to a party. Let's go clubbing." Three things I cannot stand. And really, I just wanted to talk about Hokdon or Ken. Everyone else wanted to talk about the cricket or the rugby. Suffice it to say, I went from, without boasting, in the later years of high school, I was relatively popular, pretty much well-liked, and had quite a lot of friends. But my first step into the adult world in Australia, I didn't like it. I felt like I was on a different channel to everyone else. The move to Hong Kong, which happened kind of spontaneous, yet Hong Kong gave me as an adult what Australia never could as an adult. When I went there, I had no friends in Hong Kong. I didn't really speak any Cantonese. Everything I was to achieve, it had to be by myself. And that banquet, 9 years after the day that I first arrived, again highlighted and showed my mother and myself the adult I had become. Two tables full of my good friends, three tables full of my family, a lovely wife, and a lovely baby. I then delivered a speech in Cantonese, which for some reason, despite the fact that it was not a terribly good speech, seemed to move my mother greatly. To any Cantonese listeners, o mo gong dai wa, dan hai, dan hai ngo gong dam ho. And I'll just leave that for the Cantonese listeners, although I think I screwed a little bit of the grammar up. I remember when my family visited last Chinese New Year and they commented, "Gee, there's not really much social drinking here at all. None of your friends seem to drink." I hadn't really noticed that. I guess I took not drinking for granted. Do you remember when I posted a picture of me having acupuncture a few months ago? I think it was on Anime Pacific, or perhaps it was just a picture of acupuncture. Anyway, I had a whole bunch of needles in my head, in my thighs, and in my feet, and everywhere. And I said to the Chinese doctor there, "My goodness, this pressure point thing is so powerful. Now I totally believe Hokdon or Ken." Well, I said the Cantonese word, which is Bak Dao Zi Kun, but the point is, I could make a casual reference to Hokdon or Ken to a relative stranger, and he totally got it. I love that. And I know moving overseas isn't for everyone. Some people are just too conditioned. But you'll find, if you have an open mind, everyone around the world is pretty much the same. In the words of Yoda,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
Anyway, that's been enough of a brain fart for now. But if you guys are interested in a solo episode, then I can certainly deliver it. Anyone listening and thinks they would like to co-host an episode with me, you're more than welcome to. Me and Alex are both very happy with the response to Anipak Episode 1, which was released to no promotion whatsoever, but still got downloaded several hundred times, which is really cool. I'm also on Twitter now, and if you go to the website, www.anipak.blogsum.com, you can see my Twitter there. So feel free to follow me. And any podcast, no matter how small or how big you are, if you want me to do something for you, I'm more than happy to, if you think I've got anything worthwhile to contribute. And props to pretty much everyone on my podcasting links list, amongst them Anime Genesis, of course, who, when I released the first rather bad quality audio-wise episode of Anime Pacific in the that stupid podcasting website, what's it called? Podcast Pickle, that's right. And Binu had some very kind things to say, which is to continue churning out new episodes, and I think I owe a lot of Anime Pacific to Binu there, who's still going strong at Anime Genesis. Eepa's Choice, of course, and Eepa himself, who's a genuinely cool fellow and very much into podcasting. And the person who I have probably made fun of accent-wise more than anyone else, but he always takes it in good stride. Of course, Regan Strongblood, Anime 82, who I think his podcast should be required listening to any anime fan, because, well, you're not a real anime fan unless you know and appreciate the Golden Age. No offense, kids. Upper Paddle, who also kind of instrumental in the development of Anipak, because Kent just gave so much help with the CSS and whatnot. And we'd been bantering back and forth for so long that I suppose it's almost like a sister or brother podcast to Anime Pacific in some ways. The World's Manliest Podcast, which has a new address, and I did link to, and they did release an episode, and hopefully they'll release more. They're genuinely cool guys, and they always make me laugh. They have been regular visitors to Anipak and left a lot of comments and made it feel like it was something more than relatively empty. Fightbait Anime Podcast, which is another genuinely good podcast, and I really hope it sticks around. Fightbait said that a lot of his core listeners apparently came from us, and, well, I'm truly honored to have at least somehow contributed to the fostering of that cool show. We're probably going to get together and do something on Berserk sometime in the future. Lathers Blather. And of course, when I found out that old school fan Jeff Deterik listened to my podcast, I was absolutely honored. I kind of felt like Shakespeare giving a good comment to the star of the school play. And if I could review things half as good as Jeff does, then I probably would pluck up the courage to approach some of the other podcasts. You see, that's the thing about me. All of these podcasters contacted me first. I've always kind of had self-conscious doubts about the quality of my show. And so if you're a podcaster and you're listening to this and I never contacted you, please contact me. I mean, if you want to, of course. Anime World Order is a good case in point. I love that show, as pretty much every anime fan or podcast-er does. I really wanted to have a good podcaster camaraderie with them, but I felt if ever I messaged them about anything podcast-related, I'd feel that I'd be, you know, the annoying little buzzing mosquito. I know, pitiful, huh? Well, I suppose that's the theme of this episode. I have no one to bounce humor off, so it's kind of a honest, raw episode. You know, I felt the anime podcasting world suddenly became a lot smaller when I saw that Eren and Noah from the Ninja Consultants got married, and it made pretty much world news. It certainly made Hong Kong news. I actually had a dream that I told Daryl Surratt that I saw them on the news. Why I had that dream, I don't know. Honestly, I've never listened to the Ninja Consultants, but, you know, getting married in zero gravity, that's cool. Anyway, regarding the future of Anipak, we have always delivered on our promises, I think. And one thing I really respect Alex for is the fact that through thick and thin, he produced an episode of Anime Pacific with me every single week, despite the fact that he had moved countries, changed homes, was in between places, on the road, sometimes at his own expense in an internet cafe, and we delivered an episode pretty much every single week. That was very cool. So, as men of our word, I can say that Anipak will still continue. Not as frequent as we would like it to be, but I have a few other podcasting ideas also. So if you're interested in a few other things, I certainly have a few more ideas on top of Anipak. And I'm thinking of reviewing a certain anime title in the near future, which I'll probably post in Anime Pacific, as it's kind of purely anime, and like I said, I want Anipak to stand on its own to something else. So this is Dane signing off. This is not really Anime Pacific, this is not really Anipak, this is just an epic brain fart. So until next time, see you around, and please email me at anipakmen@gmail.com. We actually did get a few emails, and if for some reason we didn't reply to you, although I usually do reply to all the emails, then it's because I intend to read it on the next episode proper. The decision to record tonight was completely spontaneous, and I had no intentions of doing it before, so excuse me if this episode sounds a little bit, for lack of a better word, spontaneous, without direction, indecisive, nonsensical, boring, completely irrelevant to anything that Anipak or Anime Pacific is about. Excuse me. And while I haven't been very active on the blog side of things at Anipak, Alex certainly has been, and I'd like to thank him for that. He's posted a lot of cool stuff over the few months there. Stuff that you cannot just find at every other anime or geekery-related blog. He's actually dug some cool stuff out there, as I have attempted to do. Although, of course, occasionally these things can turn into a, you know, look at my YouTube video lols, which I'm a little bit guilty of. And in the future at Anipak, I really hope I can review some Asian cinema stuff, especially Hong Kong cinema stuff, because I think that is something where I can excel at, as opposed to being merely competent at. So anyway, I hate long goodbyes, and now I've just been guilty of one. Until next time, see you later.